Rerun did not exist before this episode. What they are about to describe is happening across Southeast as you listen. This is their story. In Havant, nursing training programs sit half empty while hospitals across the region report critical staff shortages. The disconnect between training capacity and workforce demand reflects decisions made in Westminster about healthcare investment, not about the availability of qualified candidates or training facilities.
I've wanted to be a nurse since I was 14, watching my mum come home from her shifts at Queen Alexandra Hospital. She'd tell me stories about the patients, how much difference a good nurse could make when someone was frightened or in pain. She worked as a healthcare assistant, but I could see she understood the clinical side better than some of the qualified staff. I knew I wanted that qualification, that recognition, the ability to make those decisions that could change someone's day or even save their life. After my A-levels at South Downs College, I worked for 2 years as a care assistant in residential homes around Portsmouth. I wanted the experience and I needed to save money. The work was hard, but it confirmed everything I'd felt watching my mum. I was good with the residents, good at spotting when something wasn't right, good at explaining procedures in ways that made sense. The senior staff started asking me to mentor new starters. I knew I was ready for nursing training. I applied to the University of Portsmouth nursing program in 2019. The acceptance letter came through in March. I'd passed all their requirements, done well in the interview, had excellent references from the care homes. Then came the second letter. I'd been placed on a waiting list. Health Education England's allocation for nursing places in the southeast had been reduced. The admissions officer, Sarah Matthews, called me personally. "Key Run, I'm so sorry. There's simply no funding available for additional places this year. You've met every standard we set, but our hands are tied." I spent another year as a care assistant, watching the nursing shortage get worse around me. Shifts were extended because they couldn't cover the rota. Residents weren't getting the attention they needed. I applied again to Portsmouth in 2020, thinking surely the pandemic would have changed the calculation. Same result. Same waiting list. Same phone call from Sarah Matthews. Though this time, she sounded more frustrated than sorry. Portsmouth Student Services suggested I try other universities. Southampton's nursing faculty was helpful when I called. But their coordinator, Dr. James Fletcher, was clear. "We're in exactly the same position. Our places are similarly constrained by budget limitations set by Health Education England. It's not about academic standards anymore. It's about how many students the Treasury will fund." I tried the apprenticeship route through Solent NHS Trust. The clinical education manager, Linda Harrison, met me for coffee in Portsmouth. She'd looked at my application and was genuinely enthusiastic about my experience. "You're exactly what we need," she said, "but our training budget has been frozen due to financial pressures. We had 12 apprenticeship places last year. This year, we have 4. I kept working, kept saving money that I no longer knew when I'd be able to use. Then in 2021, I was covering a shift at a care home near the university. During my break, I walked through the campus. I'd never seen the nursing simulation labs before, but a cleaner had propped the door open. I looked inside. State-of-the-art medical training equipment, hospital beds with full monitoring systems, mannequins that could simulate cardiac arrest, breathing difficulties, surgical complications. Everything sitting in darkness on a Tuesday afternoon. I asked the cleaner about it. He laughed, but not in a mean way. "Most of this stuff never gets used. The labs are empty 3 days a week. They've got the space, they've got the equipment, they just don't have enough students to fill them. Waste of money, if you ask me." That same week, I met Margaret Chen at the bus stop. She'd been a nurse at a private hospital in Portsmouth until COVID hit. 15 years experience in cardiology, but she'd been made redundant when private procedures were cancelled. "I've been trying to get into Queen Alexandra Hospital," she told me. "They're desperate for staff, working people into the ground. But they've got a recruitment freeze. Something about budget constraints." She lived three streets away from me. She wanted to work. The hospital needed her. But someone, somewhere, had decided there was no money to connect them. I started to understand that this wasn't about shortage. It was about choice. I could see the nursing labs sitting empty. I could see qualified nurses unable to find posts. I could see care homes struggling with understaffing while people like me couldn't get training places. All the pieces existed. The decision not to put them together was coming from people who kept saying the same thing. There is no funding. But what did that actually mean? The government that prints the pound notes was telling me it couldn't find enough of them to train nurses for hospitals that were short-staffed. It was the same government that had spent £37 billion on a test and trace system that barely worked. The money existed when they wanted it to exist. I used to accept the excuse that there was no money. I hear it differently now. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins told me it could not find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. The real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the materials were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It is the same logic as a household that says, "We cannot afford it," except a household does not issue its own currency. The government does. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still working as a care assistant. I'm still applying for nursing training. But now I know what I'm really fighting. Not a shortage of resources, but a shortage of political will. And I know I'm not alone in this. Every constituency has people ready to work, facilities ready to train them, and institutions ready to employ them. What's missing isn't money. It's the decision to connect them.
What Kieran experienced has a name: fake experts. This technique presents opinions as settled expertise, especially when those opinions support spending constraints. Think of tobacco companies citing doctors who claimed smoking was harmless, or pharmaceutical companies funding studies that downplayed side effects. The key is to present a contested position as scientific consensus. In Kieran's case, every rejection cited financial constraints as though they were natural laws. Health, education, England officials, university administrators, and NHS managers all repeated the same script: no funding available, budget limitations, financial pressures. They spoke as though the Treasury's spending decisions were meteorological events rather than political choices. The austerity objection here is typical. Economists say we cannot spend more on health without causing inflation. Which economists? The profession is divided. Many macroeconomists argue the binding constraint is real capacity, not currency. Economists say, without naming them, is an appeal to unnamed authority. The proof that expertise was being misrepresented lies in what Kieran could see: empty training labs, unemployed qualified nurses, understaffed wards. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. And in Kieran's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Havant ranks 216 out of 543 English constituencies in the English Indices of Deprivation 2025, published by MHCLG. There are 4,155 registered charities in the constituency, according to the Charity Commission Register for England and Wales. Havant received £19.4 million in total grants, according to 360 Giving Grant Nav. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Locked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.